Last week, this Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives released a report on the pay gaps between men and women in Canada. Written by Daniel Cerdas-Sandy and Christine Saunier, they dove into the nitty-gritty of how traits like immigrant status, race, and level of ability affected these pay gaps. The results were... I'll just get into it. The bad news is that pay gaps still do exist in Canada, with women earning less than their male counterparts in every province. They found that Atlantic Canada specifically has both the highest and lowest gender pay gaps in the country. The highest gap is in Newfoundland and Labrador, where the average woman makes 76 cents for every dollar a man makes. The lowest is in PEI, where women make 95 cents for every man's dollar. Here in Nova Scotia, the gap is in between the two, with us gals making 85 cents for every dollar a man does, with New Brunswick making a penny more at 86 cents. They also calculated each Atlantic province's equal pay day, a symbolic day that highlights how far into the year women must work to earn what men earned in the previous year. Here in Nova Scotia, it fell on April 1st, meaning Nova Scotian women must work 65 more days in order to earn the same yearly salary as a man. PEI was once again the smallest gap, with their equal pay day falling on January 28th, with New Brunswick's 2 months later at March 28th. Newfoundland's was just 2 weeks ago on June 12th. And this is just for the white, able-bodied women. The report found that if you are a racialized woman, an immigrant, an Indigenous woman, or a woman with a disability, your pay gap will be even larger. But why do all these inequities exist? I spoke with Saunier and Cerdas-Sandy to find out why. And why do you think these pay gaps still exist, you know, now in 2026, of all things?
Yeah, I mean, we see it persisting. When we look at the data that Danielle talked about, where the gaps are larger, some of where we're seeing larger gaps. The other place that we're seeing the larger gaps is in male-dominated professions still. So even though we see a higher percentage of women who are working in extraction, natural resources, manufacturing, all those kinds of jobs, we're still seeing the most significant pay gap in those sectors. It's true, though, even when we look at where women make up much more than a majority, so health occupations is a good example, 80% at least are women, and we are still seeing a pay gap there. Part of that is still the glass ceiling. It's still that women are not in the same numbers in senior positions as men. And when we look at the private sector in particular, that really widens the pay gap, because the top pay in the private sector is much, much higher than in the public sector. So you see a much higher gap in the private sector overall. Mm. And then you see these higher gaps in certain industries. So there's definitely still occupational segregation and an undervaluing of the work that women do, the care work, the educational support work, all of those professions where we see more than a majority of women. And on the other hand, we still see these huge pay gaps even when women enter into male-dominated workplaces. So those are some of the reasons. And then the other part of this is this hours worked piece. Over a year, women may... What it's showing, you have a higher gap in annual income than you do in hourly or even weekly. And that is that piece that Danielle talked about, right? So if women are we see more women working part-time than men. And when asked, you know, part of the reason is often the caregiving. Mm-hmm. Child care, elder care, all the responsibilities that are still predominantly on women's shoulders. They are really seeing a penalty there for motherhood, and that's still a thing.
It's not all doom and gloom, though. Saunier said that these gaps are in fact getting smaller over time, thanks to things like unions and pay equity legislation.
Oh, there's lots we can do. And in fact, I think what we're seeing is that some of what we're doing is working. I mean, the pay gap still exists and it's still significant and it compounds over a woman's career, and that's all concerning. But these gaps have come down. Pay equity legislation definitely helps. But why is it not applied to the private sector? What is the answer to that question? I don't have it. So pay equity should apply to all sectors, and especially since we're seeing the bigger gaps there, right? In part of the reason we see a smaller gap in the public sector is that a lot of that employment is unionized. We need to make it easier to unionize. There's no question that unionization is part of this answer here. And I mean, we're trying to get at some of the reasons why unionization makes such a difference by enacting some pay transparency legislation. So that means in Nova Scotia, under the Labor Code, an employer isn't supposed to ask you about your previous salary, and they aren't supposed to, you know, use that as the starting point for going forward. And you're not to be penalized if you're talking about your wages in the workforce, which in some sense may seem like, why do we have to do this, right? But what we're seeing is that very first salary offer can then impact, right? It compounds down the road. And women do undervalue what they bring to the workforce. They undervalue their skills. They undervalue what even their qualifications might be. And so the other part of pay transparency, which does not exist in Nova Scotia, is to ensure that when an employer posts a job offer, they include the salary. So it's right there. So if you think about that compared to a unionized workforce, you're coming in, it's not on your shoulders mostly to negotiate what your individual salary is. It's collective bargaining that takes some of that bias out, if all that makes sense.
Let's hope that next year's report continues this downward trend as women continue to use our voice and advocate for themselves in the workplace. Thanks for listening to CKDU. I'm Jenna McConnell. This story was made possible by the Local Journalism Initiative.